Fred Hall takes you behind the scenes in swing on Swing Thing. Saturdays, 8 a.m. Pacific, Wednesdays, 5 p.m. Pacific on Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing.
City by the Golden Gate. This is KSSR DB San Francisco, Swing Street Radio. Where the big bands swing.
Yesteryear, a look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Thanks, Dave. It's time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, it's Bogart and Bacall with Bold Venture. But first, let's enjoy some mystery and intrigue with The Whistler. The Whistler, with echoing footsteps and a haunting whistle, debuted as a new mystery program on the CBS network in 1942. The whistle was 13 notes, destined to become one of the all-time lingering melodies of old-time radio. In the melodramatic early years, The Whistler was written and produced by J. Donald Wilson. The Whistler served up generous portions of ironic commentary with his stories, The tales were full of twists and surprises. Usually they contained a double twist at the end. By 1947, The Whistler went coast to coast, but despite the memorable nature of its format, The Whistler had a rather spotty record on the air. For most of its run, it was heard only on the West Coast. The Whistler was played through most of the run by Bill Foreman. Here now, from January of 1942, is The Whistler with Death Comes at Midnight. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose. Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern. Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in The Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Bert and Marge, Amos and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Wait a minute. Have you heard the strange tales of The Whistler?
I'm the Whistler.
No, 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 I don't want to die.
John.
Get away.
John.
Get away.
John, wake up.
Where is he?
Where's who?
That man.
Oh, you've been having a nightmare, John.
Huh? Oh, good heavens, Clara. It was awful. I dreamed there was a man in this room, and he stood right over me. And he said I was going to die. I was going to be murdered within 48 hours.
Sunday night, and again CBS presents The Whistler.
I, the Whistler, know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak. And so I tell you tonight the strange story, Death Comes at Midnight. John Prentice is a manufacturer, a very busy man who needs his rest. But John had a frightful dream. The dream was not brought on by a guilty conscience. John's life has been above reproach. He loves his wife, Clara, and their grown daughter, Eva. He has done no wrong to any man. Why then this awful dream with its prophecy of death? Now, the following evening, the apprentices are planning to attend a lecture, and Dwight Cooper, Eva's fiancé, is going with them. The wife and daughter are in the living room awaiting his arrival.
Oh, there's Dwight now, Mother. I'll go to the door.
Oh, wait a minute, Eva. You'd better make sure who it is before you open the door.
Oh, Mother, you're still worrying about that dream Daddy had last night.
Well, I can't help being nervous about it.
Of course it's Dwight. We're expecting him, aren't we? I'm going to let him in. Well, enter, my lord.
Hello, darling. How come you're answering the door yourself? Maid's night out?
We haven't got a maid. She went to work in a war plant.
Well, good for her.
We're going to do without a maid for the duration.
That's the spirit. Good evening, Miss Prentice.
Good evening, Dwight.
Now, you see, Mother, it wasn't a big bad wolf after all.
Not this time. But we'd better be careful, Eva.
What's this about a big bad wolf?
Seems that Mother believes in dreams, Dwight. And last night, Dad had one that was really a honey.
Oh, I don't believe in dreams.
Oh, Daddy!
Yes?
Dwight's here, so hurry up.
I'll be there just a minute.
Talk about a woman taking her time dressing.
Well, what about this dream?
You tell him, Mother.
Well, I don't believe that all dreams have a meaning. But this one John had was a prophecy, and I'm concerned about it.
Yes?
He kept hearing a man's voice telling him over and over that he was going to be murdered within 48 hours.
Murdered?
Can you imagine such a thing?
Oh, well, I wouldn't be alarmed, Mrs. Prentice. According to psychologists, a dream has no possible relation to the future. They say a dream comes from experiences of the past that have been registered in the subconscious mind.
Well, if John's been murdered in the past, I haven't heard about it.
Oh, now, wait. I didn't mean it quite as literally as all that.
The mother's been counting the hours, Dwight. Let's see, the dream came at midnight last night. Well, that means Dad's hour of doom is midnight tomorrow. If he isn't murdered sooner.
Maybe we'd better not risk taking him to the lecture.
Oh,
huh?
I wish you two wouldn't joke about it. I don't think it's any joking matter.
Oh, I'll get it. Hello?
Hello? Mr. Prentice there?
He's busy right now. Could I take a message?
Yeah. Tell him he better come to the phone, whether he's busy or not, if he wants to save his life.
What?
This is a matter of life and death.
Oh, well, hold the line a minute.
Of all the amazing things, there's a man on the phone who sounds like a gangster.
He wants to talk to Daddy about saving Daddy's life.
His life?
Maybe I'd better talk to him.
Oh, no, no. No, get John on the phone. Call him, Eva.
Daddy, you're wanted on the phone. It's important.
All right, I'm coming.
Oh, don't tell me that dream didn't mean anything.
Now, Mother, don't get excited.
Well, just what did this fellow say?
Well, here's Daddy.
Well, hello, Dwight.
Good evening, Miss Prentice.
Daddy, wait. I don't know who that man is, but he's terribly hard-boiled, and he said I'd better get you to the phone if you want to save your life.
What's this?
Oh, John,
now... I'll see what it's all about. Hello?
Mr. Prentice?
Yes?
You don't know me, but you better pay attention to what I'm telling you, see? A certain man here in town, a wealthy guy, has offered me a nice piece of dough to put you out of the way.
What?
But I want to be reasonable, see? So I'll consider... Hey, are you listening?
Yes, yes, I'm listening. Go ahead.
Well, if you want to hike the ante a little bit, say to $3,000, I'll call off my deal with this guy. What's more, I'll give you his name.
I see.
Now, $3,000's a small matter to you, so...
Wait a minute. Suppose you come here to the house and we'll talk it over.
Do I sound like a chump? You're coming to see me, and you're bringing the dough.
Oh, no, I'm not. Think I'm going to walk into a trap?
You mean you're turning down my proposition?
I certainly am.
All right, mister. You asked for it. You'll be a goner by midnight tomorrow.
All right? So listen. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Midnight tomorrow. Now, not only in a dream, but in actual fact, John has been told that he will not live beyond that hour. John phones the police, and a few minutes later, Captain Arnold arrives at the house.
Mr. Prentice, can you think of anyone who'd like to have you put out of the way for any reason at all?
No. No, Captain, I really can't.
Now, you've been in business a good many years. How about your business rivals?
Well, of course, I've made a certain amount of enemies, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of them would go so far as to hire somebody to kill me.
You never can tell. Suppose you name some of your enemies.
Oh, no. I'm afraid, Captain, I couldn't do that.
Well, see here, why not?
Well, frankly, because I might be causing an innocent person a lot of embarrassment.
Oh, well, what of it? We've got to get to the bottom of this some way. Have you had a quarrel with anyone recently?
No, I haven't.
Think carefully now.
Well, yes, come to think of it. I did have a rather heated argument with a man the other day in my office. Oh, but I'm
well,
sure...
Well, and who was he?
I'd rather not say.
Was he a wealthy man?
Yes.
Then tell me his name.
Oh, no, Captain, I'd rather not. If you'd go to his house and question him, I don't want...
How can the police help you if you won't help yourself?
Well, this is none of my business, Mr. Prentice, but if I were you...
No. No, Dwight, there's no use arguing. Got my own ideas on the subject.
Well, that's that, I guess. We'll have to conduct our investigation without your help, Mr. Prentice.
Oh, by the way, Captain, I'd feel a lot safer if you'd send an officer out to watch the house tonight.
Well, I brought a man with me. He's out in the car. I'll leave him here.
Oh, that'll be fine.
I'll leave the car, too, in case he needs it. Well, we'll do what we can, Mr. Prentice. Let us know the developments.
Well, of course, I want to thank you, Captain.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Captain.
So John is unwilling to give the name of the man with whom he quarreled. Is it really because he's concerned about the possible embarrassment of an innocent person? Tonight the house will be well guarded, and as an added protection, Dwight has agreed to stay in the Prentice home. John, feeling quite safe, has gone to bed and fallen into a sound sleep. Then, at exactly midnight...
Let me go. Let me go. I don't want to die.
John.
No, no, don't throw me off the bridge. No.
Wake up,
no,
John.
No, no, no.
Wake up, John.
What?
Oh, John, you're in your room. Nothing's happening to you.
Oh.
You've been shouting your head off.
Mother, what is it?
Your father's had another nightmare.
I thought that was it.
Yes, Evelyn. It was terrible.
What kind of dream was it? Like the other one?
Oh, it was worse. Now I know how I'm going to die and when.
Oh, you're not going to die.
I'm afraid of.
What did you dream, John?
He took me in a car to the old river bridge on Tower Street.
Who took you?
I don't know. I never saw him before. He tied my hands behind me with a rope, and when we got to the bridge, he dragged me out of the car and threw me into the river.
Oh, my heavens.
Now, Mother.
Just as we came to the bridge, I saw an illuminated clock. The hands were pointing to 12. That's when I'm going to die.
Oh, Daddy.
What time is it now?
Well, it's after 12.
Oh. Then it's tomorrow at midnight, just like that man said.
Daddy, don't talk like that. This dream doesn't mean anything.
What about my other dream? It meant something.
No, it didn't. That phone call didn't have a thing to do with your dream. It was just a coincidence. Things will look different to you in the morning.
Eva.
Yes?
Would you mind sending Dwight in here?
But he's asleep, Daddy.
I know, but please send him in. I want to talk to him.
Well, all right.
Sit down, Dwight.
They told me about the dream, Mr. Prentice, but I wouldn't let it bother me if I were you.
I can't help being bothered. The dream was so vivid, Dwight, and it fits in so perfectly with what's happening in real life.
Yes, I'll admit that's rather strange.
The reason I sent for you, well, if anything should happen to me, I want you to sort of take charge of things for Clara and Eva.
How do you mean?
I've made a will that takes care of my property, but there's my life insurance. It amounts to $100,000, and the money will have to be invested.
I see. Who's the insurance payable to?
Clara, but of course she knows nothing about investments. You advise her, will you, Dwight? I've got faith in your judgment.
Yes. I'd be glad to help in any way I can.
Come to think of it, I owe a payment on that policy right now. But the grace period isn't up for a couple of days yet. I'll make the payment if I'm still alive.
Oh, I have an idea. You'll be alive, all right. But as you say, if anything should happen, I'll be glad to advise Mrs. Prentice.
Oh, I knew you would, Dwight. And thanks.
Next morning, John announces that he will stay at home all day. Clara, upset by the events of the night before, remains in her room. But John is feeling much better. He views things differently with the coming of a new day. He will not yield to this feeling of inevitable doom. He will fight the situation.
Hello?
Mr. Prentice?
Oh, it's you again. Dwight, get on that extension in the library.
Thought I'd call and ask if you've changed your mind.
No, I have not. Much more, I defy you to even lay a hand on me. I'm being protected by the police.
Well, ain't that fine? So you won't come across, huh?
No, I won't.
Look, Prentice, the water in that river is awful cold.
What? What did you say? Hello? Dwight, did you hear that?
What's the matter, Daddy?
Heard every word. Sounded like he meant business.
Something wrong?
That man, he phoned me again. I don't know what to think.
Well, what did he say?
He wanted to know if I changed my mind, and when I told him I hadn't, he told me the water in the river would be awfully cold.
What?
How did he know about my dream? How did he know?
Yeah, it's the most uncanny thing I ever heard of.
What's the answer to all this?
Daddy, he didn't know about your dream. It's just the other way around.
Well, what do you mean?
I'm afraid Mother's right. Your dreams are foretelling the future, Daddy. They're warning you of what's going to happen.
And now John's spirits are crushed again. For if the dream told the truth, then his fate is sealed in spite of anything he can do. Dwight, however, is not ready to give up. He is annoyed with Eva for admitting her belief in the dream.
Darling, for your father's sake, you shouldn't have said what you did, even though you believe it yourself.
Oh, I know, Dwight. Perhaps I shouldn't. I said it before I thought. But there must be something to those dreams.
Yes, I know. You got me guessing. But look, let's try to do something.
Do what?
I've been thinking about this quarrel your father had. He won't tell us the man's name, but maybe we can find out.
How?
Through your father's secretary. The quarrel took place in his office, you know.
Oh, yes. Miss Edwards might know about it.
Well, shall we get on and see her?
But look, let's not tell her what we want the information for. The less we say about this situation, the better.
And we'll give her some other reason.
Yes.
Get your coat and hat on, honey. We'll get out of my car.
Miss Edwards, this is Mr. Cooper, my fiancé.
How do you do?
Miss Edwards.
We'd like to ask you a few questions, if you can spare us a few moments.
Why, yes, of course.
My father isn't feeling very well today, and that's why he didn't come down. See, we've learned that he's rather upset about a heated argument he had recently with some wealthy man here at the office.
Argument?
Daddy won't talk about it. He hasn't even mentioned the man's name, but it's quite necessary that we find out all we can about it. If you'll tell us who the man was, we'll treat the matter in confidence.
But, I don't know of any fuss your father had, Miss Prentice. He's quite an even-tempered man.
Yes. Are you sure you don't remember?
Very well. There was an argument. I couldn't hear what was being said. They were in your father's private office, but I did hear your father talking quite angrily with Mr. Reeves.
Who's he?
Milton Reeves. He's been in several big deals with Mr. Prentice.
Oh.
Couldn't you hear anything that was being said?
No. Just their loud voices. Mr. Reeves was angry, too, but I really couldn't make out what they said.
No? Well, at any rate, we've got something to go on, Eva.
Yes. I think we'd better have a talk with Mr. Reeves. Thank you, Miss Edwards.
You won't tell Mr. Prentice that I said anything, will you? Or Mr. Reeves, either?
Oh, no. You can depend on that.
I'm Dwight Cooper, Mr. Reeves. This is Miss Prentice.
How do you do, Miss Prentice? John Prentice's daughter, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Well, what is it, Mr. Cooper? I'm in a bit of a hurry. I'm going away on a trip this afternoon.
I'll be very brief. We've heard that you and Mr. Prentice had some sort of a disagreement with each other a few days ago.
Yes? Who told you that?
Mr. Prentice is quite ill, Mr. Reeves, and we think it's a result of that quarrel. If we could find out something about it, we might be able to straighten him out.
Well, John knows all about it.
He won't talk about it, Mr. Reeves.
He won't, eh? Well, John shouldn't let a thing like that get him down. Business is business, you know. He wanted me to renew a loan, and I refused to do it.
So that was it.
In his particular business, well, I don't know what the future will be with all this rationing and priorities.
Had you promised to renew the loan?
Well, as a matter of fact, I had. But I changed my mind, which is my privilege. John wanted me to wait a few days. Said he was trying to borrow some money from the State Mutual. But I didn't think it was good business to wait, so I called the loan.
Oh, I see. I imagine that made him pretty angry.
Did it? You'll pardon me, Miss Prentice, for talking so frankly about your father, but really, I never heard a man get so abusive in my life. Why, he actually threatened me.
Yes?
He acted like a schoolboy. Said he'd get revenge.
Do you think he will get revenge?
Oh, no, no, I...
Oh, yes. You're afraid of him, aren't you? You'd like to arrange things so he couldn't possibly get revenge, wouldn't you, Mr. Reeves?
Did you threaten him?
Say, what are you getting at?
I think you know what we're getting at.
I do not. Now, see here. I've told you all I'm going to tell you, so now I'll ask you both to leave.
Surely. You've told us quite enough, Mr. Reeves.
Dwight, hadn't you better go to the police station and tell Captain Arnold?
No, darling, not yet. But I'm sure Reeves is the one who's hired that thug to kill your father.
So am I.
He said he was going on a trip. He wants to be out of the way when it happens, so he won't be suspected.
Of course. Then why shouldn't we have him arrested?
I'd like to get more evidence first. I want to find out more about that loan. Who do you think could tell me?
Well, Mr. McAdams ought to be able to tell you. He's the treasurer of Daddy's firm.
All right, I'll go see him. Look, honey, suppose you take a taxi and go on home. See how things are getting along.
Oh, Dwight, I...
Please, honey, I may have to do some running around. Look, don't tell your father about this.
Oh, no. All right, Dwight. But don't be gone too long.
I won't tell him.
But Dwight has been gone much too long to suit Eva. It is now 11:30 at night. Eva and her mother have become increasingly nervous as the clock ticks off the seconds, bringing the time closer and closer to midnight, John's last moment on earth.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Dwight, where have you been?
We've been worried to death.
Well, one thing led to another. McAdams had gone out in the country, but I finally caught up with him.
Have you told the police about Mr. Reeves?
No, I haven't. Where's Mr. Prentice?
In the library.
Oh, he's in a terrible state of mind, Dwight. He's got the door locked. He told the policeman to stand outside his window.
Listen, someone at the door. Oh, my heavens. Oh, why didn't the policeman
Now, don't get panicky,
Mother. I'll see who it is.
Open the wicket.
It's a messenger boy.
It might be a trick. It
looks all right.
Telegram for Mr. Prentice.
All right, I'll take it.
Signed here.
There you are. Here.
Oh, thanks, mister.
I wonder who'd be...
Mrs. Prentice, have I your permission to open this message? For certain reasons, I'd like to see who it's from.
Why, yes, Dwight. Go ahead.
What is it, Dwight?
It's important. Very important. I've got to show it to your father right away. Mr. Prentice, open up. It's Dwight. Mr. Prentice.
It's all right, Daddy. Unlock the door. Dwight's got a telegram for you.
Why doesn't he answer? We'll go outside and look through the window. The officer's out there. Come on. Where is that officer, Eva? I don't see him.
I don't know, Dwight. Daddy told him to stay right here by the window.
Eva, look. The window's wide open.
What?
What's that?
Oh, my heavens. There's the policeman on the ground. Something's happened to him. He's hurt.
Officer. Officer. He's coming around. What happened?
I seen a car drive up in the alley. Oh. A light-colored sedan. And just as I started to investigate, somebody slugs me in the back of the head. That's all I remember.
And they've got him. They've got Daddy.
Darling, I'm going after that sedan.
How do you know where it went?
I'll find it. I'll drive to the Tower Street Bridge.
I'm going with you.
No, you stay here, Eva.
And why does Dwight think he'll find the light-colored sedan at the Tower Street Bridge? Is it because Mr. Prentice saw that bridge in his dream? Or is there another reason? A reason known only to Dwight. But Eva can't wait, and so a moment later, another car speeds toward the bridge. The policeman's car. The officer is at the wheel, and Eva and Clara are by his side.
Oh, officer, can't you go faster?
I'm driving as fast as I can, Miss Prentice. Say, I better put in a radio call to headquarters and have them send a squad car to the other side of that bridge. No telling what we'll run into there.
There's the bridge right ahead, officer. And there's the clock.
What clock?
The one Daddy saw in his dream. And look, it's midnight.
I don't know nothing about the dream, Miss Prentice. All
I see a car out on the bridge. You see it?
That's the baby. That's the one I saw at the house.
Where's Dwight's car? Dwight's car isn't there.
He must have got lost. Say, we'd better watch our step. Squad car ain't come to the other end yet.
Oh, hurry, officer.
Now, don't you get out of the car. You stay here. I'll see what's going on.
Yes, but hurry.
All right, Miss Prentice. You and your mother can come here.
Is Daddy there?
There ain't a soul here. The car's deserted.
It'll be too late. He's already done it.
Who's done what?
Oh, can't you remember anything I told you about Daddy's dream? I'm talking about that man. He's thrown Daddy in the water.
Oh.
Isn't there something we can do?
Oh,
it couldn't have happened very long ago.
If your father's been thrown in the river, Miss Prentice, he's a goner. But now,
oh,
nobody could swim in that current.
Oh, poor Daddy.
What I can't figure out is why the guy left the car here.
Oh, poor John.
Hey, look. There's some rope in the back of the car. And a knife.
He tied Daddy's hand.
Hey, here comes the squad car now. They're coming in from the other end of the bridge.
Oh, officer, who's this car registered to?
Wait a minute. By golly, there's no registration slip in it.
I know who it belongs to. Milton Reed.
I'll take the number and we'll check on it later.
What's up, Jack?
It looks like there's some dirty work been going on here.
Yeah? Well, maybe this guy knows something about it.
Quit shoving me, will you? Where'd you pick him up?
He was running away from the bridge.
Oh, he was, huh? All right, buddy. What do you know about this sedan?
Not a thing. I wasn't on the bridge.
Well, that's him. That's the man who threatened Daddy over the phone. I can tell by his voice.
Well, now we're getting someplace. All right, you. Give. Where's Mr. Prentice?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You threw him into the river, didn't you?
No.
You're a liar. Come on, talk.
I don't know nothing.
We'll get you to talk at headquarters.
A few minutes later, the river's being dragged for Prentice's body. But what has become of Dwight? He hasn't been seen since he drove away toward the bridge. The two heartbroken women return home to wait for the sad news. They step into the house, and Mrs. Prentice breaks into a sob.
Oh, come, Mother. You must try to get hold of yourself. We must try to be brave.
Oh, I know, dear. I know. What has become of Dwight?
Oh, I don't know what on earth could have happened to him.
Eva, darling.
Dwight, what are you doing there in the library? We thought you'd run out on us.
Well, I haven't been here long.
Oh, Dwight, it's terrible. I never dreamed such a thing was going to happen.
No, no, just be patient, darling. I'll tell you everything. I told you I finally saw McAdams.
Yes?
Well, the story about the loan was a lot worse than we thought. I found that Reeves had a grudge against your father. So he planned to ruin him and get everything he had. And he did just that, by refusing to renew and calling the loan. He did it deliberately. He worked in a backhanded manner and wrecked the business. He held the paper on everything your father owned.
Father's broke.
Yes. Reeves broke your father. Absolutely penniless. Reeves has the business, this house, everything. He pulled it so fast that your father hadn't a chance to get on his feet. When I found that out, I suspected the truth, but I wasn't sure until I got to that bridge.
The truth? Then you did go to the bridge.
I did. I got there just in time to prevent the tragedy. I pulled your father into my car by force, turned around on the bridge, and came back here.
Oh, what are you saying? He isn't dead.
No, he's here, in the library.
Oh, heaven! John! John!
No, just a minute. Oh, please, I'll bring him in. Come in, Miss Prentice.
Oh, Father, thank heaven you're safe. John, what happened?
I know how you feel, Mr. Prentice, but you'd better tell him.
Yes, Dwight, I will. You see, my dears, I just couldn't bear the thought of my wife and daughter suffering poverty. The only thing I had left was that insurance policy, and it would have lapsed in another day. I had to think fast.
John, you don't
if
mean...
If I'd commit suicide while the policy was in effect, you'd get $100,000. But I wanted to spare you the disgrace of the suicide, so I decided to kill myself and make it appear as though I'd been murdered. Then, as I developed the plan, I got an inspiration. Why not hang the murder on Reeves, the man who had deliberately ruined me? That would be my revenge. Well, now you know the whole story. Now you understand the nightmares.
But the telephone call...
Well, I hired the man to make the calls and steal Reeves' car and drive me to the bridge and then jimmy the motor, as though it had stalled. All so that my murder could be traced directly to Reeves, who really had a motive to kill me.
What motive?
Well, my secretary knew all about it. When I discovered it was Reeves who was back of my failure, I threatened to divulge something I knew about him. He flew into a rage. The secretary heard him, and that was just what I wanted. But I knew I couldn't raise the money quickly enough, and my insurance policy was up tomorrow at noon. Well, that's the story. And it's all a miserable mess.
Yes, John. It's all a very, very sad situation. Oh, but wait a minute. What about that telegram the boy delivered earlier? Where does that fit in? Was that part of your plan, John?
Telegram? What telegram? Let me see it, Dwight. Why, it's from the State Mutual. They've granted the loan I requested.
Yes, John, they've granted the loan. Now you can straighten things out. Now you can get back on your feet again. Think, John, what a sad tale this would have been if you'd followed through with your plan and Dwight hadn't caught you on the bridge at midnight.
Original music for this production was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Tonight's Whistler story was written by Herbert Connor, directed by J. Donald Wilson, and came to you from Columbia Square in Hollywood. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From January of 1942, Bill Forman as the Whistler with Death Comes at Midnight. In a moment, it's romance and adventure with Bogart and Bacall. Bold venture as yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Bold Venture had two things going for it from the very beginning, Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. Set in Havana, the show was produced and syndicated during the winter of 1950 and 51. Bogey played Slate Shannon, owner of a Cuban hotel. Bacall played Sailor Duval, whose father had died, leaving her under Slate's supervision. The rundown hotel setting was perfect for the wildest assortment of drifters and causes, becoming a crossroads of treasure hunters and revolutionaries. The theme music was provided by David Rose. Here now, from 1951, Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall in Bold Venture with The 12-Year Promise, another classic show from the golden age of radio on yesteryear.
Bold Venture. Adventure, intrigue, mystery, romance, starring Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. Together in the sultry setting of tropical Havana and the mysterious islands of the Caribbean. Bold Venture. Magic names of Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall bring you Bold Venture and a tale of mystery and intrigue.
Slate, I just had a thought.
Well, let you and me keep it to yourself, huh? Till I finish totaling up the hotel expenses for the day.
Sure. How can a man think about two things at once when he's pitting his brain against an adding machine?
Well, this one's shifty. I've got to watch it.
You and your army surplus bargains. What's it doing to you this time?
Look at that. Look at that total.
$49,685 for a day's expenses? That's what I always say about you, Slate. You've sure got a head on your shoulders.
Well, that was just a trial run. I'm going to have at it once more. What did you pay for the cake you bought for that dinner party?
I told you, 10 pesos.
You could have got it for 6 at Senora Sanchez's delicatessen.
The last time I was there, Senora Sanchez made me help her fold strudel.
Now look, sailor, one of the reasons I went into the hotel business was so that at the end of a day's work I could cuddle up with a clear buck. To save 4 pesos, you could have folded a strudel or two.
Mr. Slade, there are 2 men here who...
Don't bother to tell him, boy. We'll work it out together. Him and me and Rhino here.
Yeah, together. And the lady, too. All right, then it'll be a party.
All we need is one more guest. Matt Wallace. Invite him, Slade. It won't be fun without him.
Matt Wallace? Well, I haven't seen Matt in... Oh, let's see. It must be 10-12 years in Dallas. We work in the oil fields together. Dream we'd strike it one day. You're telling me Matt's here in Havana? Yeah, I'd like to see him.
You will, Slade. Honest, you will. Rhino and me's got a feeling he's going to come here and throw his arms around his old buddy. We want to be here to watch.
Yeah, we got a feeling we want to watch.
We'll let you know when Matt comes, if he comes. Goodbye, boys. Sorry to break up the party.
She said goodbye. The lady said goodbye.
King!
Yes, Mr. Slate. I escort them out for you. Come on, you two.
Rhino, the boy wants to play. Play with him, Rhino.
I like you, Ray. You're good to me. Let's play, boy.
You did the wrong thing, Mr. Adams.
It is a nice party. Games and everything.
Slate, get him off. King, you...
Oh, Slate, my gun might bite you. Let the boys have their fun till Matt comes up.
Yeah. I hope he don't come for a long time, Ray. For a long time.
Ray? Ray, is that you? I'm in the kitchen. Well, how did... Oh, Matt. You came back.
I won't ask you anything about Ray.
What do you want?
You're my wife, Vi. I want you to listen to me.
About what?
Let's give Shannon all of it, Vi.
Oh, you're crazy.
Listen, Vi, we don't need it. Leave the oil strike to Shannon. Get out of here. Go someplace. There's a million places, Vi. I'll show them all to you. We haven't given ourselves a chance. You'll
just
see.
Just tell me a thing, will you? What's Slate Shannon got to do with you?
12 years ago, we gave each other a promise.
Crazy, Matt. You really are. The man I took for a husband is out of his mind.
You don't know Shannon. He'd have done the same for me.
He'd strike oil and give you half for a 12-year-old promise?
Shannon would.
Oh, if you'd only tell me where, Matt. Just tell me where you made the strike so I'll know. In case
anything happens to me, forget it.
I try to all the time. I can't sleep worrying about something might happen to you.
Oh, Vi, listen to me. Just listen.
You'd better get out of here, husband.
All right. To Shannon, like I said I would.
I hope you make it, husband.
I told you once, Rhino. Don't make me tell you again. Leave the boy's guitar alone.
Oh, Ray, I gotta keep doing something with my hands. You know that. Just waiting around makes me itchy.
Don't pout, Rhino. Maybe you'll find you someone else to beat up, to fill in the gap. Till Matt Wallace gets here.
You'd do that for your boy, wouldn't you, Ray? Toss him a bone like that?
Any time he cries for it, you'll remember him.
How can he forget? You always referee Rhino's matches with a gun, Ray? In some crazy places, that could be called no contest.
My boy's fast, but sometimes he's outweighed. The gun evens it up. I have to take care of my boy.
King could take him in a round, couldn't you, King?
He's strong, Mr. Slip. It might take longer than that.
You're a smart boy. Rhino cut you to pieces. The people, Rhino is smartened up that way. Still, I'd like to match you two for real sometimes. But some other time. Well, look who's here. Hello, Matt. You kept us waiting.
Slade. It's been 12 years. I counted them.
Me too, Matt.
Meet your reception committee, Matt. Ray and Rhino. Funny songs, witty sayings.
Ray? I've heard that name. A little while ago, my wife called me Ray.
A woman gets confused sometimes. Ray, Matt, close enough. This won't take long, Matt. What we've been waiting for. Just tell me where you made the oil strike, and we can part friends.
You made a strike, Matt? You come to tell me that?
Yeah, kid. All those years, I finally made it. But it's just for you and me. No one else.
Hear that, Rhino? It's gone to his head. The man's oil happy.
Yeah, to his head, oil happy.
Tell us where you made it, Matt, or I'll sick Rhino on you.
Cost me too much. Cost me too many years. You left the
Rhino.
Yeah.
Oh, slate. You fool, Rhino. You crazy, stupid fool. Why'd you shoot him? We'll never...
You told me. You said...
Get out of here, quick.
King, help me with him.
He's alive, Lady Steeler. We get him to doctor.
Take care of him. I'm going after them.
Wait. There's a piece of paper in my pocket. Slate's half... It belongs to him. Tell him I get the doctor.
Get a police doctor, King. It's more in his line. You've been gone for a long time, Slate. What happened?
I lost him. How's Matt?
They took him away in a stretcher. The doctor doesn't know whether he'll live or die.
He'll live. All they have to do is give him a piece of adhesive tape and point in the direction of home.
The police were here, too. Wrote in little black books, asked questions, wanted to know where you were.
What'd you tell them?
I raised an eyebrow and smiled archly. The police giggled and nudged each other.
You don't know I was here when the shooting happened, huh?
No. They kept hitting each other with their elbows. I had to remind them what they came for.
Uh-huh.
Who's Matt Wallace, Slade?
Guy. I used to know him.
He gave me something for you. Here. This.
16 Avenida Charles, Havana, Cuba. I, Matt Wallace, do hereby deed to Slate Shannon.
He's giving you 50% of an oil field. I read it. What are you looking out of the window for, Slate? Slate, I'm talking to you.
Hmm? You say something?
Who's Matt Wallace? Why did he...
50%. What do you know?
What's the matter with you? Who's Matt Wallace? What's all this about?
Okay. Imagine a guy like that, sailor.
Like what?
12 years ago, Matt and I worked the oil fields together. 12 years ago, we gave up, Matt and I. We shook hands. We told each other if we ever hit, half of it would belong to the other. Then we walked away. What do you know? Matt remembered. An oil strike.
Hey, where are you going? What do you want?
I'm a friend of Matt Wallace's, I thought...
How'd you find me?
This address is scribbled on a piece of paper Matt gave me. I didn't know you came with it. If I'd known, I'd have got here sooner.
That'd make you Slate Shannon. Come on in. You can close your eyes to how the place looks. I've been tearing it apart. The cheap way they make things nowadays, easy to tear apart.
That's how you feel about Matt. You rip open his upholstery?
I'm his wife. He hides things from me.
Like where he made his oil strike.
You see right through a girl, don't you, Slate? The things she wants, the people she wants to divvy him with.
Now, you take me. I'm not like that at all. Matt says I get half. There's a pact we made. I'm selfish. I don't want to share it with anybody.
Oh, but you will with me. For a reason I've got.
That's a good reason. Now try me with another one.
You're a lot like Matt. You have to be bled for your secrets. Ray!
Glad you joined us, Ray. I've been looking for you.
I'm going to do something for you, Vi.
The man's got a tight mouth. Take him someplace and it'll loosen it for him.
Anything for you, Sugar. It'll be easy, Slade. I'll take you to Rhino. You can ride along on this gun.
Sorry, Vi. The man's got me over a barrel. Bye, sugar.
Okay, Shannon, out of the car.
Yeah, you don't budge. Help friendly, the man says. See how nice he can do with a little help? He learns easy, right?
On your feet, Shannon. You're going to say where Wallace made that strike, or we're going to leave you here on the beach for the gulls.
The gulls will get you if you don't watch out. Funny, ain't it funny, Shannon? Laugh. Shut laugh.
You don't know what you're doing.
Where's the strike?
I don't know. I keep telling you.
Rhino, you remember Kansas City?
When I had the man call? Sure, I remember.
Tell Shannon. Tell him.
Listen good, Shannon. I threw two rights. Like this. then the big one. Did you see, Ray? Just like in Kansas City.
Yeah. I'll say a word or two and I'll throw some sand in his face.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
To Bold Venture, our stars Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall, and the second act of our story.
Miss Sailor, she got a big suspicion. Say to King Moses, go on a mission. Find Smith Shannon wherever he be. In Barrio on beach, bring him to me. King Moses, he look all over place. Find Mr. Shannon with sand in face. Bring him home to Lady Sailor. Now his head need very fine tailor.
He's home, King Moses, but his heart's not in it. Something's happened to Slate Shannon. He's been walking up and down on that patio for an hour now.
He done that before, Lady Sailor.
He's thinking about things, remembering things. Things that happened a long time ago. I felt like I was watching a stranger. This fever for oil.
King! Hey, King!
Yes, Mr. Slate?
Hi, Slate.
Hello. King, what'd you do with my gun?
It's in the...
Don't tell him. Slate, why don't you talk to me? What's happened to you that you need a gun?
Off the arm, Sailor. Come on. Where's the gun? You gonna tell me, King, or am I gonna have to convince you?
Miss Sailor...
Tell him.
I'll get it, Mr. Slate. Here, the gun.
Now you own an oil strike, Slate. What are you going to do? Kill people from the sheer joy of it?
I don't know where the strike is. I can't claim it.
Why don't you ask Matt?
The hospital won't let me see him. He's unconscious. He'll probably die.
You're going to help him along with a gun?
Look, Sailor, Matt liked to talk. Somewhere in Havana, he must have dropped a word. I'm going to find out where. See you.
You were right not to call out to him, Miss Sailor. He had the look of a man to whose stopping could not be done.
He had the look of a man who ought to be banged over the head with a blunt instrument.
You will wait for him?
No. I'm going to share it with him. Like the man said, see you.
You loused it, Ray. You and your ape Rhino loused it.
Be kind to us, Sugar. If Slate didn't spill after what Rhino did to him, he never will.
You should have been here to see me, Vi. I was going good. It's just that the punk washed out on me before.
And what
I
you
could...
did to Matt. Mm-hmm. That was bright, too, huh? Shutting his mouth with a bullet.
Here he's in the hospital, alive. Rhino could pry his mouth open again.
He could die, too, without making a sound.
Yeah, that's possible.
Maybe half a million in oil. A girl could buy a moon for that and all the little moons. Only she doesn't know where it is.
Maybe we know someone who does, Sugar.
Who?
The girl is known as Sailor Duval. She was alone with Matt when Slate ran after us, after we shot your husband.
You think he told her?
He must have thought he was dying. Matt tells a girl a lot of things when he's dying. Especially about a long dream that came true.
All right, get her. Talk to her.
See how easy it is when you're nice, Sugar? Let's go, Rhino. Bring your fist.
See, Senor Shannon, such a man as you had described was here to eat on my blue plate.
What did he say? What did he talk about?
Senor.
You don't have to get cagey with me, Pedro. What did he tell you about the oil?
The oil. He said not too much in the salad.
I'm
going
to have to beat it out of you, Pedro.
Senor, you have best with the bells are on.
Nice going, brave man. 6 more inches and Pedro will top 5 feet.
What do you want, sailor?
I'm worried about you.
Do something clever with a handkerchief. Cry in it.
Come on, Slate. You've been going to these places all night. What's it gotten you?
It's gotten me you. Stop following me. Get out of here.
Slate, you've got to listen to me.
I don't have to listen to you. I don't have to listen to anybody. Get out of here.
All right, Slate.
Hey, you're difficult to keep up with, Miss Duval.
Well, Ray, get away from here. It's been a bad night.
Then let's get out of it. Let's say hello to each other at my place. It's not much what we ask, Miss Duval. Just a few pretty words out of your pretty lips.
Yeah, pretty lips.
Why, Rhino, I didn't think you cared for things like that. I thought with you it was just broken bones.
Anyone's, Mr. Ball, even yours. Isn't that so, Rhino?
Stop putting words in the man's mouth.
Even yours, Mr. Ball, just like Ray said.
Just tell us what Matt told you.
As near as I can remember, all he did was groan.
And after that, he told you where he made his oil strike.
After that, all he did was groan. Like this.
That's a good word. You pronounce it good. But Rhino can teach you to do it better.
I'm with you, kid. Sure he could. But it's all Matt told me.
Maybe it is. Maybe Slate Shannon would be a better teacher. Better than Rhino, even.
You're going to get Slate to beat me up?
Just to die for you, Mr. Ball. That's all we'll ask him to do. Just die. Right in front of you.
King Moses is happy to see you come home, Mr. Slate.
I'm tired.
And Miss Sailor, she is very tired, too?
Sailor?
Did she not come home with you?
No, isn't she home?
Maybe she still look for you.
She found me a dozen times. I finally got rid of her.
Rid of Lady Sailor? This she will never do. You send her away, she will come back. If she not come back, you will go for her. Nothing will change this. Not you. Nor the oil that makes the madness in you.
You don't know how it is. Just... Clay Shannon speaking. What? Yeah. Yeah, sure. Right away. That was the hospital, King.
Lady Sailor, something happened?
The best thing in the world has happened. Matt Wallace just regained consciousness. He wants to talk to me.
About the oil, Mr. Slate? Do not go to him.
Don't go to him. What's the matter? Have you gone crazy, too? Hi, Matt. They treating you good?
Yeah. Took a long time coming to see me here in the hospital.
They wouldn't let me in. Said you were unconscious. Said you were dying. Where is it, Matt? Where'd you make the strike? What's to laugh? We wasted the sweet part of our lives looking for oil. You found it. Half of it's mine. Like we agreed. Like we made a solemn oath. I want my half, Matt.
There isn't any oil. Never was. It's a game I played with myself.
You're lying. You don't want me in on it.
You're wrong. There's a hole in Brazil. A deep, deep hole. Brine at the bottom, salty to the taste. Take it, kid. It's yours, all of it.
What are you talking about?
Did a lot for me, Slate, that empty hole in the earth. Told her I'd struck oil someplace in South America. Kept my wife loving me. And held its promise up to her nose. For that, she loved me. For that, she tried to get me killed.
It was a deed you gave Sailor. What kind of a thing was that to do to me?
I thought you'd help me, Slate. Help me keep up my little game so my wife would keep on loving me. Not Ray. Not anyone.
You look tired, kid. You better get some sleep.
Yeah. You too. Don't give it up, Slate. I'll find it. I'll still find it. You'll see.
Sure you will, Matt. Sure you will.
It won't take 12 years this time, Slate. I got an idea. A hunch.
Have a nice visit with the sick, Mr. Shannon.
Huh? Oh, yeah, Rhino, I sure did. You should have been here.
I'm polite. I wait for you outside the hall. You're going on another visit, friendy.
You think so?
I don't think. Ray does that for me. Ray, or the gun in your back, or just my bare hands. See the hospital sign, friendy?
Says quiet.
That's how I want you should be, quiet. Let's go, friendy.
Now, how'd you get here, sailor?
When you threw me away, a man came up and took my arm.
I'm sorry for that.
Slade?
Yeah?
Go shove your head in a derrick.
Miss Duval says she doesn't know where the oil is either, Shannon.
Why bother her? I know.
You didn't know a little while ago.
Man gets older, he learns more.
It works this way, Shannon. You tell me where the oil strike is, you and the girl here join hands and skip all the way home.
If I don't, you kill me, huh?
Both of you. You and the lady. One at a time. Rhino can do it without blood.
Yeah. Yeah, he was telling me on the way down. 20 fights, 18 knockouts. One man died.
Yeah, one man.
Where'd that happen, Rhino?
Toledo, my best fight.
I wish I could have been there watching you, but you were great.
They never forgot me in Toledo, did they, Ray?
Where's the strike, Shannon?
I wish you could have seen the newspaper clipping.
Me too.
You're going to say where, Shannon?
They talked about it, wrote about it, took my picture with a movie actress. They called her a star, and I was great in Toledo.
Show me what happened in Toledo.
Huh?
Shannon, what are you building?
Come on, Rhino, show me a great fighter like you. Show me on Ray, so I can see what happened.
Huh?
Take him, Rhino. Take Ray, like you did with that guy in Toledo, so I can see what you did.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're crazy. You're punch-drunk crazy man. Stay away from
me. I just want to show him, Ray. It was like this. The old corkscrew.
You maniac. Keep away.
Bend one toe.
The Rhino.
Then. Downstairs. In the earth. That's how I was. In Toledo. The other guy laying on the deck. But the other guy didn't even get to me. Not like this.
You're such a smart man, Slate. You open your mouth and people drop like flies.
I'm not done yet. There's another one, a woman.
Vi Wallace? What are you going to do to her?
Mention her name to the police? Go on home, sailor.
You told me that before. Look what happened.
I told you I was sorry. You can stay if you believe me.
I believe you. You sure it's all over, Slade? The oil, the fever for it.
Who needs oil? I've got everything I need.
Like what?
A hotel, a boat, a friend, King Moses.
What else?
You.
That's my old Slate. See what it gets you?
Yeah, sure. What'd you say, sailor?
You've got a faraway look in your eye.
They're wildcatting oil in Brazil. I read about it.
You going to Brazil? Goodbye.
How can I go when I've got you around my neck?
No, you haven't.
Give me your arms. Now I have.
Better than wildcatting?
I don't know. I never kissed a wildcat.
And so our two stars, Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall, have brought to a close our latest bold venture story. Special music was composed and conducted by David Rose. May we invite you to listen again next week at this time for another exciting adventure starring Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall together in Bold Venture.
From 1951, there's Bogart and Bacall, Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall with Bold Venture and the 12-Year Promise. Well, that's all we have time for today. Tune in again next week, and why not invite a friend to listen to more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those thrilling days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, fireside chat. Sat listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, volio, dodio, do.